Sri Ramana, Best of His Grace, Part 2. In 1937, T.S. Anathamurthy visited Sri Ramana Ashramam for 10 days. He gave a detailed account of this visit in his book, The Life and Teachings of Sri Ramana Maharshi. With this issue, we conclude his story related in Chapter 16, titled Sri Ramana Bestows His Grace on the Present Biographer in 1937. At about noon, devotees began to disperse one after another. Only visitors like me and my wife remained in the hall. At about 12 o'clock, the dinner bell was heard. Sri Ramana got up from his seat, picked up his stick, and walked into the dining room. My wife and I and some other guests followed him and sat in front of the plantain leaves spread on the floor by the attendants. There were more guests than on the previous night. Some were women. Among men, some were Christians. One Muslim guest was also sitting along with us. Some were foreigners. All castes of Hindus were represented in the dining room. Sri Ramana's habits were cosmopolitan. Cooks and servers were, however, all Brahmins. Among cooks, there was a woman cook also. All were old devotees of the sage, and they had volunteered to serve in the ashram by way of spiritual sadhana. Sri Ramana was seated on the raised platform, and a leaf was spread in front of him. During morning hours, there was no restriction of women's movements in the ashram. When all the guests were seated, the servers began to serve the midday meal. Ichamal, a woman devotee of the sage, had brought cooked rice from her house in a vessel. She served a handful of it on Sri Ramana's leaf. She then served small quantities of it to the other guests of the day. She had been permitted to perform this kind of service, and I learnt that she had been doing so for many years. Her ancient story was ascertained by questioning some of the attendants of the ashram. She was old in years. She was dignified and quiet and did not speak with anyone. After rendering this kind of service, she went back to the town to take her own meal. Though there was complete informality in the dining room, every guest ate food respectfully, looking at Sri Ramana at frequent intervals. Some of the guests were orthodox Brahmins. They did not like to mingle with the non-Brahmin guests. So they were made to sit in an adjacent room, and the same articles of food were served to them by the same servers. The midday meal too was simple. It consisted of rice, pickles, vegetable curry, chutney, sambar, and buttermilk. The meal was finished in 15 minutes. Sri Ramana stood up after he had finished the meal and walked out into the courtyard and washed his hands and feet, and then went into the hall and reclined on the sofa for rest. His attendants closed the doors and asked visitors not to cause any disturbance. My wife and I then went to the guest room and rested there till about 4 p.m. Then we walked into the hall, which had been opened for visitors a little earlier. We humbly prostrated before the sage, who was seated on the sofa. He was looking around and he was in Jagrat, that is, waking state. Devotees began to arrive and the hall was filled up within a short time. Then three or four Brahmin pandits arrived. They first prostrated to Sri Ramana and sat down on the floor and began to recite or chant sacred verses just as they had done on the previous evening. As soon as they started to chant, Sri Ramana changed his posture and sat motionless. His lustrous eyes were open and he appeared as though he was staring at infinity. To borrow Paul Brenton's metaphor, Sri Ramana's bright eyes looked like two stars. Everyone in the hall heard this Veda Parayana in strict silence. The chanting ended, as on the previous evening, with the recital of the following Shanti Mantra, namely, Om Sam No Mitra Sam Varuna, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Then the pandits who had chanted the mantrams stood up and prostrated to Sri Ramana and walked out of the hall. It was his usual hour for the evening stroll on the slopes of the hill. He picked up his stick and walked away in the northern direction, attended by the same devotee whom I had seen on the previous evening. All the ladies came out of the hall and most of them went away to their houses. My wife and other women visitors like her were sent away as on 31st of March 1937 in the ashram Pullakkad into the town for spending the night in the town lodge referred to earlier. At about 7 p.m., a frugal evening meal was served in the dining room. After Sri Ramana sat down in front of his leaf, which was spread on the brick platform, I sat down along with 10 or 12 guests and ate the same kind of meal as on the previous night. Strict silence was observed by all the guests and by the servers too during the meal. Sri Ramana looked at us now and then, but he did not talk with anyone. Talking with him in the dining room was not allowed. After the supper was finished, Sri Ramana walked back to his seat in the hall and sat down at ease. A few minutes afterwards, some devotees and I entered the hall and sat for practicing meditation. One big Petromax light was brightly illuminating the hall as on the previous night. After some time had been spent in silent meditation, I felt the need to put a question to the sage. I stood up and noticed that Sri Ramana was sitting with his eyes closed. His benevolence gave me the necessary courage to go near him. When I went near the sofa, with my hands folded in reverence, he looked up. I assumed that he had accorded permission to me for putting a question. I then said, "Sir, may you know what is meant by saying that Atman is light? May you know if Atman looks like the Petromax light which is burning in the hall?" Sri Ramana was pleased to give me the following reply in English. He said, "Atman is not a light like the Petromax light. It is called light because everything else becomes known through it." These simple words in English employed by the gracious sage cleared the doubt which had arisen in my mind. Sri Ramana became silent after instructing me in this manner. I then walked out of the hall and retired to the guest room for the night. At about 9 a.m. on the next morning, I was sitting in the hall of the ashram a few yards in front of Sri Ramana, who was seated in samadhi state on the sofa. Many men and women devotees were also sitting on the floor with their eyes closed. Perfect silence prevailed. We were all watching the sage, who was effortlessly sitting absorbed in the self. To watch him was itself a great inspiration. An old Brahmin pandit, who was till then sitting with his eyes shut, stood up and walked one or two steps forward and stood near Sri Ramana's sofa. This pandit was clad in silk upper angavastram and a dhoti beneath his waist. He wore two diamond rings on two of his fingers of the left hand. He had diamond set earrings also. His tall forehead was marked by vibhuti stripes. There was also a big kumkum mark between his two eyebrows. He was a well-built old man. He loudly addressed Sri Ramana in Telugu and spoke with a stentorian voice. He said, "Swamiji, many men and women are now sitting before you in order to get some instruction. You do not speak even one word. They too do not put any questions to you. They are all silently sitting to learn something. What are you teaching them? What are they learning from you? Please explain this secret to me." Sri Ramana did not stir. He did not open his eyes or make any gesture to indicate that he had heard the loud words uttered by the old pandit. All of us were eager to listen to any answer that the great sage might give. The questioner stood for 5 minutes, hoping that the sage would give a reply. However, the sage continued to sit with his eyes closed as before. The old pandit started to speak again and said in Telugu as follows, "My two questions have not been answered by you, Swamiji. I too cannot discover the answers. Please explain the matter by word of mouth." After having thus spoken, he continued to stand. Sri Ramana then opened his bright eyes and looked at the old pandit and replied in Telugu as follows, "What are you asking me? Is there anyone here to teach others?" Unable to give an answer to the questions put by the sage himself, the Telugu pandit said again as follows, "If it is so, why are so many men and women sitting patiently in front of you? What profit do they derive by sitting in this hall?" Sri Ramana, with a slight smile on his serene face, gave the following instructive reply. He said in Telugu, "The question must be put there. Why are you putting that question here?" When he used the adverb there, the sage stretched his hand towards the assembled devotees. When he used the other adverb here, he turned his hands towards himself. Such were his suggestive gestures and answers. From the words and gestures of Sri Ramana, I realized a profound secret. Other devotees assembled in the hall must also realize the same thing. That was this. Sri Ramana had no notion or idea that he was a teacher or a guru. Likewise, he had no notion or idea that the men and women sitting in the hall were ignorant and that they needed enlightenment. From the great sage's point of view, everyone in the hall was Brahman or Atman. His drishti was that of a knower of Brahman. Knowers of Brahman have Brahman drishti. On another day, I approached Sri Ramana and begged him to explain the following verse of the Kathopanishad, namely, "Yame Vaisha Vrunute Tena Labhyai Tasyesha Atma Vivrunute Tanum Swam." It can be known through the self alone that the aspirant prays to. This self of that seeker reveals its true nature. In particular, I asked him to explain the significance of the verbs Vivrunute and Vrunute used in this verse. These verbs have been commented upon at great length by the ancient commentators. Sri Ramana was pleased to explain the matter in the following manner. He said, "This verse means that God will disclose His form to the devotee who surrenders himself completely. God is not partial to anyone. God confers His grace on all who surrender themselves to Him. God is the Atman in everyone." Sri Ramana's succinct exposition of this complex verse solved my doubts, which I had entertained till then. Scholars are aware that this verse is the second half of the 23rd verse of the second valli of the first chapter of Kathopanishad. I stayed for 10 days at Ramanashramam, even though I had gone there with the idea of staying only for 3 days. My wife could not stay for so long a period because our children had to be looked after in Bangalore. They were all young boys in 1937. So she returned to Bangalore after 3 days. The Sarvadhikari generously permitted me to be the guest of the ashram during that period. One morning, I was sitting in the hall and meditating in the presence of the sage, just like other devotees. One verse of Kathopanishad had long been baffling my understanding. That verse runs thus: Prati bodha viditam matam amrutatvam hi vindate atmana vindate viryam vidhyaya vindate amrutam. It is really known when it is known in and through every modification of the mind. For by such knowledge one attains immortality. By Atman one attains real strength, and by knowledge immortality. Kathopanishad 2:4. I stood up and walked towards the sofa and drew the attention of the sage, who was sitting in the normal waking condition at that time. When he was pleased to look at me, I told him in English that I had difficulty in comprehending this verse of Kathopanishad and that I needed his help understanding it. Since I knew the verse by heart, I recited it. Sri Ramana heard the verse with attention when I recited it slowly. Then he desired to read the verse in the book itself. I did not have that book with me at that time. He asked his attendant to go to the library of the ashram and get a copy of the book. The attendant, who knew Sanskrit, went to the library and brought a copy of the said Upanishad. Sri Ramana took it in his own hands and then gave it to me and directed me to show the page on which it was found printed. I looked into the book and found the verse and showed it to him. The great sage read the verse silently and looked at me. I said that I had two difficulties in relation to that verse. The first question was if every vritti of the mind was Brahman, as indicated in the first half of the verse. The second question was if physical strength was attainable by a person who realizes the Atman, as indicated in the second half of the verse. I expressed these two doubts to him in simple English. Sri Ramana then replied as follows: Yes, everything is Brahman. Every vritti of the mind, including grief or sorrow, is Brahman. Every kind of strength, including physical strength, will be obtained by a person when he realizes his Atman. In this clear-cut manner, the merciful sage set at rest my doubts and answered my two questions. I recall one or two more conversations I had with Sri Ramana. One day, when practicing meditation in the hall, along with many other devotees of the sage, I could not concentrate my mind, and I discovered that unwanted thoughts were disturbing my serenity. I desired to bring it to the notice of the sage and to learn how to surmount the difficulty. So I went near the sofa and said in English, Bhagavan, my mind is not steady today. What is to be done? The great sage raised his head and recited the following verses of the Bhagavad Gita. One should raise oneself by one's self alone. Let not one lower oneself, for the self alone is the friend of oneself, and the self alone is the enemy of oneself. Chapter 6, verse 5. From whatever cause the restless and unsteady mind wanders away, from that let him restrain it and bring it under control of the self alone. Chapter 6, verse 26. After quoting these two verses for my guidance, the benevolent sage, in his infinite mercy, added the following English words: "These two verses contain all the necessary instructions for gaining serenity of mind. All efforts must be made to become effortless." He then closed his eyes. The last day of my sojourn at Ramanashramam arrived. On that morning, I took my breakfast sitting in front of Sri Ramana in the same dining room. Many other guests were also present. Some of them were newcomers. The usual breakfast of idli and sambar and hot coffee was finished in 10 minutes. Sri Ramana sipped the coffee slowly after reducing its temperature. On that morning, one or two fried vadais were also served by the attendants. I imagined that fried vadais were indigestible, and so I told Sri Ramana that I was afraid to eat vadai. That was the first occasion when I had the courage to talk to him in the dining room. The sage looked at me with his delightfully pleasing eyes and said, "You will digest it. You may eat." Then my fears fled away and I ate the vadais without suffering any indigestion. After the breakfast was finished, I purchased a photo of Sri Ramana from the bookstall of the ashram. I desired to get it from the hands of the sage himself. Carrying it in my hands, I went into the hall and prostrated to Sri Ramana, who was seated in Jagrat state. There was no one else in the hall on that occasion. That was a surprise to me. I told him that I had purchased his photo and that I desired to receive it from his hands. Having said so, I gave the photo to him. He graciously stretched his hands and took it from me and looked at it for half a minute without saying any word by word of mouth. He was pleased to give it back to me. I received it with great satisfaction. Then I wanted to obtain his blessings before I left the ashram. So I went near him once again and stood for a minute looking at him. I addressed him and said in English, "Bhagavan, I have enjoyed great peace in your presence. Permit me to return to Bangalore. May I know if I can receive your help when I reach Bangalore? I pray for your benediction." The benevolent sage was still then reclining on the sofa. He dramatized the parting scene. He sat up vertically on the sofa and with a kind but loud tone, he said in English as follows, "What? Is that time, place or distance for me?" After putting this question to me, he reclined on the pillows of the sofa and closed his eyes. His words and gestures were charming, instructive and benevolent. They indicated perpetual compassion and love of all who pray for his aid. His gracious words are ringing in my ears, even after 34 years.